I'm very happy now to welcome Sandy Buffett. She's the executive director of Conservation Voters New Mexico and Conservation Voters New Mexico Education Fund. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Great to be here, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
So we have you on just about every year during the legislative session. You
Yes.
are basically a lobbying group and an education group.
Correct.
Bringing to the attention of the voters and the citizens of New Mexico issues having to do with conservation on all fronts.
That's right. Conservation Voters New Mexico, or CVNM as I may refer to ourselves, we are the political voice for conservation and environmental protection in New Mexico. And we have a unique role. We work to elect pro-environment champions, and we are focused at the New Mexico State Legislature. And we do that not just because we love politics, but because we want to be able to have a strong voice and ensure that strong policies that protect air, land, and water have a fighting chance at passing over there. So we elect champions, we lobby full-time. We're actually the only full-time lobbyists on all the range of environmental issues at the Roundhouse. And then we keep score, and we do an annual scorecard of how your legislators are voting on the environment, getting a 0 to 100% score.
And some of the people love that scorecard, and other ones find it quite annoying.
That's right, and I just love how some of the legislators act like, oh, yeah, I've seen that scorecard of yours, and then we say, yeah, I think you got a 70, and they're like, I got an 86%, and they know exactly what their score is.
Right,
so
right.
It actually is having an effect of moving legislators, because when they get phone calls, emails from their constituents, if they're on issues of environmental protection, they, of course, on any issue, but what their constituents call them about and email about matters to them.
Yeah, and they're, in theory, at least obligated to represent those constituents.
That's right, and we have varying degrees of that going on, but the good news is that in the 5 legislative sessions I've been at Conservation Voters, I do see a real change where we have more allies, folks that not only are voting the right way, but really are in their core believe in environmental protection. So that's been a nice sea change just in the 5 years I've been doing this.
One of the things that you have been observing is when bills come up that would harm the environment, give us an overview of some of those bills that have been, in your view, negative toward the environment and where they stand in this legislative session.
Sure. Well, in this 30-day short budget session,
which isn't really supposed to have that much
right.
legislation.
I think we're probably close to 1,000 bills introduced or so. CVNM is tracking 80 bills currently that have a positive or negative environmental impact. And those issues range from GMOs to air pollution to land conservation to water quality, renewable energy, oil and gas operations. So we see the gamut. But just a few bills I want to mention. Just this week, we had Representative Gardner's No Severance Bond Projects in Certain Counties, which sounds sort of
bureaucratic.
It said that any county that imposes so-called onerous ordinances or regulations that hurt the extractive industries would not receive state money in the form of severance taxes. So that could be tens of millions for some of these counties that would be cut off because they're working to protect their communities, the public health of their citizens. And this, I think, is sort of a cynical attempt to punish counties such as Santa Fe County, Rio Riba County, that have adopted common sense regulations and ordinances, such as in the Galisteo Basin fight.
And has that gone anywhere?
There was a vote to table the bill and it tied, and then there was a vote to pass it and that tied. So we're going to have to just maintain vigilance on that committee, make sure that our people, our legislators who would vote to kill that, are always in the room if that comes up. But I think given the clock, that's in a pretty good situation.
Right.
And then there was one, they rescind the pit rules bill, which never got deemed germane. So in effect, it's dead. They found it had no budget implication. And that would have sought to overturn the Governor Richardson's pit rules, which protect groundwater from the production wastes involved in oil and gas operations.
That's a dead one, too. Where did these bills originate?
You know, in the interim, in between legislative sessions, the legislators do, even though it's a citizen legislature, they do meet year-round in committees around the state. And industry brings issues, all sides bring issues that they want legislators to understand, to study, to research to those interim committees. And some of these issues often come up. We are seeing more of a regulatory reform rhetoric is what we're hearing about. You know, Governor Richardson has been a champion in ensuring that his environmental agencies are doing everything that they can to protect air, land, and water. And that has not been to the liking of some of the industries in this state. So they're pushing back. But so far on those bills, we can turn our attention to more proactive, good environmental bills now that we know that those are not moving.
We're talking to Sandy Buffett of Conservation Voters New Mexico. So some anti-environmental legislation is dead.
Yep.
So let's talk now about what's actually moving in the legislature.
There's a great bill sponsored by Santa Fe's own Representative Brian Egolf. It's called the Air Quality Control Permit Denial. I prefer to call this bill the Children's Right to Breathe Act, HB 276. What this bill does is it gives authority to the Environment Department that, amazingly, they don't have right now, and that is to deny or revoke air quality permits for the most egregious air pollution violators. This so-called bad actor provision already exists in most other environmental statutes, water quality, hazardous waste, and solid waste, but for some historical reason, it's not in the Air Quality Act. So this bill would amend that act to give the state bad actor authority. What that means is it would not affect the vast majority of companies operating with a permit in this state. This is really meant to give the state some tools to go after the worst of the worst offenders that in some cases aren't even operating with a permit. So it says, if you operate without an air permit and you exceed 25% of the allowed levels of pollution, then that perhaps could make you a bad actor. Or if you are convicted in a court of law of environmental crimes, or if you have failed to disclose key information under the Air Quality Act or knowingly misrepresented facts. So this, actually in the last 7 years of this administration, the bad actor provision and the other statutes has only been used once. So this is not a sweeping piece of legislation, but unfortunately we're facing real opposition to this.
Who would oppose that and why?
Most of the industry that gets air permits are currently working the House to oppose it. So it's gotten to be one of the most visible environmental pieces of legislation this session, just in the last few days. And what it's meant to do is to give the state the authority, just, you know, the few situations where a community is, that a facility is near a children's center, or where communities are getting sick, and the entity is just flaunting the state and saying, we're just going to continue to operate this way.
Right. In other words, we don't care if the community next to which we're operating is getting sick.
Right. And the few cases over time where this has happened, this is not an entity next to Santa Fe Prep. These are poor communities. These are people without a voice. You know, a child, if they develop asthma as a child, they're likely to have it the rest of their lives. And we know air pollution is a major contributor to asthma. So why, when we need to make sure our kids have everything they can get to succeed, why would we not give the state the tools they need to protect the air quality that our children and that all of our citizens are breathing? If you are a constituent of Representative Egolf, please call or email him and thank him for sponsoring this really important piece of legislation. That was HB 276.
So that is a piece of legislation. Let's talk about some of the other bills that are on the floor.
Sure. There's a really exciting development, a bill called the Farmer Protection Act. That's SB 303, sponsored by Senator Eric Griego. And this is around the issues of genetically modified organisms, GMOs. The bill itself actually is very narrow and simple. It just sets up a legal framework. And again, it's mystifying that this doesn't already exist, but that says New Mexico farmers are not liable if, say, a genetically modified seed from a neighboring field of genetically GMO planted fields.
Or a truck passing by.
Right. If the seed accidentally contaminates a New Mexico farmer's land, that there would be protection for liability for that sort of accidental contamination.
Now, this is something which is hard to understand if you don't know the precedents for this, but there are some famous cases in which Monsanto sued farmers because these farmers' fields were inadvertently, unknowingly contaminated by Monsanto seeds, which they not only didn't choose, but really didn't want.
That's
they
right.
They got in there, they were airborne, you can't control that, and Monsanto sued them for having their patented crops in their fields.
You know about this issue well. And what we're hearing from some of the folks who in the legislature aren't familiar yet with this issue is this is a solution looking for a problem. But in fact, we know, say, from the Center for Food Safety, which has a report online called Monsanto versus U.S. Farmers, they say that as of 2007, 112 lawsuits had been filed by Monsanto against farmers for this very type of, you know, patent infringement issues. So over 372 farmers involved in those cases. It's a 21st century reality of our agriculture. And we just want to make sure that farmers in New Mexico are protected, that they can continue to farm the way they always have, that they have sovereignty over their seeds, that a company can't just, without permission, come onto their land to take samples. So the bill discusses that. And also it provides jurisdiction that if a company were to sue for patent infringement or royalties of some sort, that instead of being back in the Midwest or overseas, wherever the corporation that was suing is based, which has happened in other cases, that this bill would provide jurisdiction that the case has to be heard in district court in the state of New Mexico.
Very so interesting. Does that have good support?
Well, it does. There are a lot of voices coming out very quickly in support of this bill. We understand that, well, Santa Fe County and Rio Arriba County already a few years ago passed resolutions related to seed sovereignty. All Indian Pueblo Council, National Congress of American Indians, and the 8 Northern Indian Pueblos all have some sort of resolutions out on a broader issue, not just on this bill, but related to GMO-free zones and calling in opposition to those issues. So I expect a sort of a groundswell of support. This bill just started moving very quickly, so I think we'll see opposition also mounting. But if this is an issue that your listeners are interested in, I really urge them to call their state senator. And in this listening area, that would include Senator Worth, Senator Phil Griego, Senator Nancy Rodriguez, Senator Carlos Cisneros, and Senator Richard Martinez. They all need to hear from you that SB 303, the Farmer Protection Act, is something they should support. It's just common sense. We want to side with New Mexico farmers over out-of-state multinational corporations.
We're talking to Sandy Buffett from Conservation Voters New Mexico. A couple of more bills to talk about.
Sure. There's an interesting bill called the Private Right of Action, HB 259, which is sponsored by Speaker Ben Lujan. And what this would do is give a crucial tool that we currently don't have here at the state level. Again, relating to Governor Richardson's legacy, he's done quite a bit to ensure protection of our resources. But we want to make sure that all future administrations, that they wouldn't have to necessarily roll back those laws and rules, but they could choose not to enforce them. And so what this bill would do is give a tool to citizens to demand enforcement by their state government.
Right.
And this provision already exists in some federal statutes, but it amends various Environmental Protection Acts and the Oil and Gas Act to give citizens the ability to enforce pollution provisions of those statutes. And so
that's very interesting, because as we know, there's many good laws on the books and historically untold numbers of laws that never were enforced.
Yeah, that's right. And so also this gives citizens that might, or communities that might not be able to afford this kind of litigation, it says that their costs would be reimbursed if they prevail in the case. You know, and this is another tool to hold polluters accountable. And it would also then, the court could direct the state to perform its mandate and enforce the rules on the books.
And what's the support look like for that bill?
Well, it's gonna see its first committee this week. But given that Speaker Lujan is on it and several other folks in leadership have signed on to it, I think this one is going to move. And also encourage your listeners to support HB 259, Private Right of Action.
One more bill, Natural Heritage Conservation Act.
Yeah, SB 186, sponsored by Senator Carlos Cisneros. What this does is simply set up an entity. There's no budgetary impact involved. Of course, as you know, this was not the year to bring a new revenue request to the state. But the conservation community, groups that do land easements, conservation easements, have really grappled with how do we get some real resources to bring to the table to ensure that we can protect working farms and ranches, watersheds, and promote easements, all the various things that we need to protect open space and the areas we cherish here in the state. So this entity, again, no fiscal impact at this point. It just sets up the entity, and then we could then start to receive federal dollars. Right now we miss out on $20 million a year for federal grants and money that we could be getting for land conservations. That would allow us to start receiving some of those. And then the entity could also receive private donations.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
It's hard for citizens who don't closely study the issues to know things like that. What legislation even makes it possible to bring in federal money that would be
right.
well spent?
Right. And, everyone hears about, oh, this piece of land or this hill is going to get developed, and how do we protect it? And this is the kind of entity that would create resources for communities that decided they wanted to protect a piece of land.
Now, once again, what does the support look like for that?
That was actually in the governor's state of the state. It is a priority, it passed with no recommendation out of its first committee, but it's still moving. I believe it's now in Senate Finance, and there's a lot of stuff in Senate Finance these last few days. But we think we still have the momentum on that bill. And on all of these bills, what's really exciting, Mary Charlotte, is this session, although predicted to be just so difficult because of what the state is facing, because we have more allies now over at the Capitol, these are bills that even just 3 or 4 years ago would never have even passed out of their first committee. And now we have these are just four of the major bills that are moving. But we're actually seeing bills brought by the rest of the environmental community now have a fighting chance of if not passing this year, passing eventually. Because, again, legislators are hearing more from their constituents that these issues matter when voters go to the polls.
Due in no small part to you, Sandy Buffett, and Conservation Voters New Mexico, both the lobbying and the educational end of that. It really is a fight of the little guy versus, is there a lot of corporate influence? We hear about Washington, which is a nightmare in that regard, if you want to think about citizen action versus the incredible influence of corporations. What's that like in New Mexico?
Yeah, it does seem like several of those bills I mentioned to you have a thread, and that is sort of a David versus Goliath battle that we face. The voice for conservation is growing, but I can't deny that the voice for unfettered economic development is also powerful and growing. And we just want to make sure that people understand that it's a false dichotomy to say that, we need jobs so we can't afford environmental protection. It's actually the opposite. We know from studies that when CEOs look at where they want to relocate a company, they want to know, well, are the schools good? And what's the quality of life like in that state? Is there access to the outdoors? Is there clean water and clean air? And is it a place I want to raise my family? So it's the very time, if we want to continue to develop New Mexico economically, that we also make sure that the communities that are raising their families here, that they, they deserve clean air and clean water so that their kids can grow up healthy and happy.
Well, there's also the social justice aspect of it, which, as you kind of alluded to before, the places that get most dumped on are the places where the poorest people with the least amount of political clout live.
Yes, that's true. But What we find is that when conservationists align themselves with groups like just people, land-based groups that also are very powerful at the legislature, the land-based groups, the Sequias, all of those folks, they do have a voice as well, and the legislators listen to what they have to say. So when we are on the same page, such as on this Farmer Protection Act, it can be very powerful.
And there's also, finally, the issue that it's not only the quality of life, but it's the viability of ecosystems.
Right.
Without which none of us is going anywhere in future generations.
Well, and water quantity is, of course, and thank goodness it's been snowing. It's been great for our water table and our aquifers. We need to protect water because here, I mean, where it's scarce in the first place, we can ill afford to contaminate a single drop of groundwater. So these bills that we fight, where industry is saying that regulations should be more lax and weakened to allow them to contaminate water up to a higher point. Actually, we say, if you want New Mexico to be a competitive place, we've got to have clean water here. So it's always difficult to sometimes get into the merits of the argument when you're in the final days of the legislature. Oftentimes it comes down to politics rather than policy. But we feel that's our role of making sure that the environment has a fighting chance in the political process. And again, citizens can play a key role in that by making sure that their state representatives, their state senators, all of their elected officials continue to get the emails, the phone calls, the handwritten letters that they demand that their elected officials protect our environment.
Sandy Buffett is the executive director of Conservation Voters New Mexico and CVNM Education Fund. They can be found on the web at cvnm.org. And all the things that we talked about, all the bills we talked about, are on there. Thank you so much, Sandy, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay tuned to KSFR.